Hi. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of House Resources. Time is, it's like 1:43, and members present, Representative Seaton, Representative Tarr, Rep. Johnson, Rep. Olson, Representative Wilson, myself, Co-Chair Feige, Co-Chair Sadler is off giving testimony in another committee, as is Representative Walker. And what's going on with business here? Today's calendar is SB 27. And let's see, we don't have any public testimony. We have available for questions Commissioner D.C., Larry Hardick. We'll have apples for dessert.
Here we go.
And
they've got them in the lounge.
There you go. Excellent. Deputy Commissioner from DNR, Ed Fogles, is present. Michelle Bonnet-Hale from DEC Water Division. Jeff Rogers, Budget Manager for DEC. Ruth Hamilton Hesse, Assistant Attorney General for DEC in person. And Dave Blaisdell, Admin Services Director, Department of Law. So, are there any amendments to Senate Bill 27? Representative Tarr?
I have amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Dick.
There's been an objection. Representative Tarr.
Okay. So there were a lot of concerns with this legislation and the potential cost. And I know at this time there's some difficulty with letting us know exactly what the program would look like. But we know that it's going to take a couple of years for the application to be completed. And so this is just a simple amendment to update us on the cost of the program as the application's coming together, so people have that information available to determine whether it's worth funding in subsequent years. So just a simple update to the legislature to help us understand what the long-term costs of this program will be as we're making the decision about funding.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. Discussion on Amendment 1. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if someone from the administration could come and maybe answer questions about a question or...
Commissioner Hardick?
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Larry Harty, Commissioner of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. And we did look at amendment number one and understand the importance of being able to keep the legislature apprised of our expenditures, and certainly the legislature always has the opportunity to weigh in on those. But I really didn't see, and we didn't, our division administration didn't see the need for this amendment. It's a little bit different, I guess, way I read it than was explained a minute ago by Representative Tarr. It says that we would update an annual report of the cost of administrating the state dredge and fill permitting program. Of course, we wouldn't incur the cost of administrating the program until we get it, which would be 5-10 years out. And so, and before we would be able to expend those costs, we'd have to be back anyway to get those increments in those positions. And so you're the gatekeeper there before we'd be able to incur those costs. If it's in terms of giving a progress report as we progress from, if the bill passes, we get the fiscal note, as we progress in the next few years, one is if it's the cost that you're concerned about, we, of course, come back each year and present our budget, and it's there for review each year. And to generate a report seems to me a bit premature until we had a chance to really gather the information and assess it and pull it together and see what the program looks like. What you would be getting is, well, this is a report with a lot of contingencies and maybes to it. You know what we'd be, the maximum we'd spend, it wouldn't be more than that. And of course, every year we come in the report on what we spent and how we spent it. So I guess the bottom line is although we understand the need to always be accountable to the legislature, we didn't see this as needed.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Commissioner, are you saying that that this is going to be an automatic thing that you do anyway, but you'll just be doing it to the Finance Committee and maybe the subcommittee and not to every single different legislator?
Yes, Representative Wilson, through the chair. That's correct, as if you read the bill to say that we should report, like, say, at the beginning of the next calendar year and the beginning of the calendar year after that. We wouldn't be running the program yet, and this talks, the bill actually, amendment talks about reporting on the cost of running the program. Well, we wouldn't be running the program yet, so the cap would be zero. But if it's really saying we want to know what you're doing for the last year, that would be coming as part of our annual report to the Finance Committee and our subcommittee that gets into those details.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson, did you have a follow-up?
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think what this asks for, my understanding, is what you've done in the previous year, which on January 20th or so you're going to be bringing to us anyway and asking for additional funding for the future year. I guess we could just read the minutes of the subcommittee meeting and get the report. And I just don't know what kind of time it would take to, well, if you don't do anything, it's a pretty easy report. But so I don't know the necessity of it. And the way it's worded, just to me, like we're just going back and checking your work as opposed to a forecast of what you plan on doing. So I don't know that this is a necessary amendment. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else? Representative Seed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I'm concerned because the fiscal note is basically committing for 5 years, four years of which is $2.414 million. And the statement has been made that in a couple years, maybe they'll find out whether they want to proceed or not. I'm concerned that we're setting up in statute a process that has $2.5 million basically with it every year for the next 4 years. And I'm not sure that without a report coming back to us, at least on the progress of this initiative, that, you know, maybe this amendment needs to be changed so that there's progress on the, you know, analyzing the progress on the analysis of the 404 adoption, because otherwise we've got this open-ended $2.5 million commitment, basically. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to offer a conceptual amendment to the amendment, and that would be that the annual report would talk about the progress that has been made on implementing or analyzing implementation of the taking of the 404 permit. And I'm making this conceptually because I'm doing it on the fly here, but I think that that's what we are talking about. So I would move that as a conceptual amendment to amendment number 8.2.
Okay, I'll object for purposes of discussion. I think I get what you're trying to put forward. As I read amendment number 1. And I'm not sure exactly what the sponsor's intent is here on this, but the bill is looking to basically authorize the department to investigate whether or not we should assume primacy of the 404 program. So by requesting an annual report of the cost administering the state dredge and fill permitting program, I'm not sure exactly what the sponsor is wanting to do. So perhaps Representative Tarr, you could address that there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the conversation because, in fact, that is what the amendment is intended to do, is give us the progress report as suggested by Representative Seaton. And I guess just two scenarios. Today we're looking at this legislation. We are seeing the predictions on the fiscal note for, you know, going 4 years out. But what we're not able to be told today is, you know, what the expected fiscal impact of actually administering the program would be. And what I'm thinking is, you know, another scenario where we would be considering authorizing funding for the positions necessary to do the application, but if we additionally had the piece of information that primacy of this program would mean hiring 40 new staff members and, you know, several million dollars, given the conversations we're having about the budget, that perhaps we would think, well, now's not the right time to continue with this application because we don't expect, you know, should we be successful in 3 years, that we'll be in a position fiscally to add 40 new positions to the department. So in that case, I wouldn't think it would be a good expenditure to continue on with the application. So I'm just trying to find a way that we would get a bit of a progress report. When I look back at the work done by the department in taking over primacy for NPDS permitting, there were several steps along the way. And at one point in the application process, you had to submit the number of anticipated positions. So I know that work's going to be happening as you work on the application. And so I'm looking for a way to, you know, instead of just having a discussion about the fiscal impact of, you know, the positions necessary for the application next year, to also get an update about the fiscal impact as we understand it at that point in time of administering a program. So that's what I'm trying to get, sort of a progress report. And agree with the conceptual amendment, and even another suggestion would be on line 7 and a report of the projected cost of administering the state dredge and fill permitting program. And I think that's what I was intending, is just for them to be giving us a little more of an update as they make progress, so we have a full picture of what would happen.
And how about we do this? Let's take a brief at ease. Mm-hmm. Would you and Representative Seaton get together and agree on a little better language in your conceptual amendment?
Mm-hmm.
Give you about 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll come back and vote as to if we want to do that with the conceptual amendment.
Okay.
Okay. So at ease. At this point, we're back on the record. And I should note that we were joined by Representative Sadler and Representative Tuck approximately 10 minutes ago. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this would be language, still conceptual, but language starting on line 7. And it would read, annual report of the progress in the development of assuming the state dredge and fill permitting program described in AS 4603-020-14. And the estimated cost of administration of the program, period. So that would replace everything from line 7, from the start of line 7 with that language. And I'll provide you with a copy of this that I just read.
Okay, are there any objections from the committee?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, do we have a motion on the floor of your previous conceptual amendment that you need to withdraw before you amend the amendment, which is not kosher? Amend the amended amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I think I was clarifying the language of the conceptual amendment.
I'll accept that, yeah. Okay, is there an objection to the amendment 1 to amendment 1?
Objection.
There is an objection.
For discussion purposes only.
Okay.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sadler.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. Based on our sideboards there, understanding the my agreement, my understanding, the intent is to kind of give a running quick feedback into how the progress is going. It would not be my intent to use an estimate of the cost at this, you know, 1 year process as a basis for not proceeding with the further investigation evaluation. If it's a progress report, it's not an actual final decision point. And further, that how accurate an assessment, how accurate an estimate has to be, I would like to err on the side of giving some leeway, given that it's a new process. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you don't know. So an estimate that they would not be held to the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
That would make my intent to support the amendment.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Chairman, responding to that, yes, this is a report on progress of the development of assuming. So it's information coming back to the legislature in a written form instead of just verbally, so that everyone has the same information, and that the conceptual amendment has no intention of saying that we are, you know, that they have to have all the information before they can report to us. It is the progress on where they are in the development and what estimates they know at the time, but it's not a not trying to make a final decision for the legislature in any way.
Okay. Okay. Representative Clark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just want to echo those comments on the record that not the intent to prevent this application from going forward, but just an opportunity to get some information to be informative in our decision making. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments from committee or discussion? Commissioner, anything to add?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Certainly this body can ask us to come in at any point in time and give you a progress report. I have several concerns. One, of course, this late in the session, make an amendment that has to go back to the other body when it's a report that we could give you at any time, and you know what that does on timing. But also, what we're, as I explained earlier in the testimony, we would be going at this with the expectation that probably around end of 2015, we would have a good idea of what primacy would look like and what the cost benefits would be. And so it's, you'd have one report and then we'd be back. So I really think you're talking about one year report here, and you'd be getting that report, seeing that we would start July 1 is when we get the money, you know, that we have to report into the calendar year, December 31st, it'd be for 5 months. So I realistically really don't, again, see what it adds. You'll get a good, solid report. The whole body will. This committee will get a report as we look forward to describe what we see as the cost benefits. That's 2 years out. And if you really wanted more information next year, I'd suggest that you'd get a lot more information if the date was past December 31st, and it was just a matter of coming from the committee and giving you a presentation. We'd all be happy to do that. Okay. Just trying to show point out the practicalities, not say the idea is wrong, it's just the practicalities here.
Understand, Commissioner. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What I don't see is anything in this law that says that we're going to have a final report in 2015. This has a fiscal note going all the way through 2019. So, although we can, you know, invite people back before the committee, it's quite different than getting a written report saying, you know, what's been accomplished to date. And if this goes on, as often things do, they get delayed, then we'll have an annual report. Because if it goes a year or 2 years or 3 years from now, then at least we'll be getting the progress report. So there's nothing in here that cuts down the program at all. But it assumes that the fiscal note is real and that we're going through fiscal year 19. And so I would just say that preparing a report of what's been done in each of those years as we go forward. And if we get a final report, of course, this will stop, because if we assume primacy, then it's no longer developing the program. So that would be my comment, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, with the money that we're spending on year after year after year, I don't think asking for a report is really all that much of a burden. And, you know, in my mind, we haven't really justified the need to be able to seek primacy. Like, everything's been kind of anecdotal in its argument. And, you know, we don't know from year, especially with the fiscal constraints that we're faced with, whether this will always be a priority for us. We may end up having other priorities with our budgeting. And I think by having accurate information that we can study and know as things progress, know that we're making a good investment or not going down this direction, I think is very important. So I would support the amendment.
Okay.
Did we adopt the, are we on the main amendment now?
No. We're on Amendment 1, no. 2, Amendment 1.
Okay. Then I have nothing at this point.
Okay. You maintain your objection, Representative Sutter?
Yes.
Okay, the objection has been maintained. The question is, shall Amendment 1 to Conceptual Amendment 1 to Amendment 1 pass? Will the Secretary call the roll?
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Hawker is absent. Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Co-Chair Sadler.
Yep.
Representative Wilson.
Yes.
Co-Chair Feige.
Yes.
8 yeas, 0 nays.
Okay, by a vote of 8-0, Amendment 1 to Amendment 1 has passed. Okay, so Amendment 1 as amended. Question?
Nope, there's one big. This is Amendment 1, not 2.
Okay, and we have, I forget who objected to Amendment 1, but.
Was it me?
What's that?
I did. If I didn't, I will.
Okay. So Amendment 1 as amended is on the table. You maintain your objection for discussion.
Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
And not just for discussion, it's because I oppose it. So, and the reason I voted, in clarification, the reason I voted for the last amendment is I think it, at least if this passes, that gives us a little more guidance than the original. But, Mr. Chairman, I think this whole bill is a report. It's a report back to the legislature. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we're asking the department to do our job. When they come before us in subcommittee, this is the kind of stuff that we need to look at. And I don't think that that the subcommittee would be bashful if they're not performing in a manner to jerk the funding. Even if it isn't a fiscal note, it will still have to be go through the operating budget year after year. So I think we're basically asking the department to do our job. And they're probably much better at evaluating what they need to be doing than writing reports. So on that basis, and also, you know, the 15th through the 1st, a five-month report doesn't make any sense to me. So even though I voted yes on the amendment to the amendment, I think this amendment, basically, we just need to do our job, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And I agree we need to do our job, but we need the information to do our job. And if we're saying we're going to throw this to the finance subcommittee, which is a much smaller group that is going to be not looking at the full resource committee implications, then I think that we're winnowing that down to looking only at the report from the idea of what's the fiscal consequences, not as what is our job is to look at it from the resource consequence. And so, you know, that's why I would support the amendment, because I think that if we don't have the information and we're just requiring us to remember that people are off working on 404 permits and we're not going to, or investigating it, we're not going to get that report unless it is somehow brought to us. And so this just make sure that in the future years, no matter who's in the resource committee or who the chairs are, there's going to be a report coming back that will stimulate everybody's attention. And so that's why I'm supporting the amendment.
Any other discussion? Representative Tuck.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Another concern I have is that unlike the 402 permitting that was able to get phased in, this is hard decision all at once, and I think that we need to have that information along the way to make such a solid decision in the future. I think it's prudent for us to do that, and it gives us the opportunity to better see what we're getting ourselves into. So I will support the amendment.
Okay. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. I had my questions about the intent of the amendment itself. It seems to short-circuit the process. Again, the whole purpose of this bill is to authorize the departments to evaluate and come up with information. Certainly, we can bring the commissioners before us at any time and ask the progress and get a good report on that. We heard earlier in a different legislation that good project management is to plan your work once and do it, to go back and replant it over and over again is what raises the cost and extends the time. And I do know that having gone through the water quality and air quality permitting processes, the expertise is there. They know how to do it. And I think we do have our opportunity at this point and the final sanction of the primacy to weigh in on the cost. So I'm probably not going to support this amendment.
Any other members? Commissioner and perhaps Deputy Commissioner, would you guys like to weigh in?
Mm-hmm. One last clarification, Chairman, is that I heard a couple of comments about $2.5 million. There's a $1.4 million DEC fiscal note, but that includes DNR's costs at BRSA Otum, and it's under our services category. So it's $1.4 million is what we're talking about. I heard both numbers being used, but I just want to clarify that.
Okay. For the record, I'm Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and I really don't have much to add to what Commissioner Hardik said as far as our position on the amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seaton. Clarification. On the fiscal note on SB 27, we have in year 15 1845.3 and 8 employees, and that's from Environmental Conservation Water Quality, and from DNR, Administration and Support, in 15 and thereafter we have 566,000.7 and 4 employees. So maybe I added slightly wrong, but 1.85 and 5.6, 560,000 gets us close to that rounded off number. So maybe I'm reading that. I'd like to get it corrected if I'm reading that fiscal note wrong.
Commissioner? Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I do believe you're reading them wrong. What the way I read the fiscal note, this way we intended it to be, is it starts out fiscal year 14 is 1.434.7. If you look up at the services line, or personal services line at the top, the 495.4, that's RSA or DNR portion of that. That's what you pick up in their fiscal note. You see the source of their funding. That in the fiscal year 14, we start out with five full-time positions at DEC that would be authorized under this bill, and I think DNR is two. And then once we get to fiscal year 15, then we would add three, not add eight, but add three. So you have a total of eight, the five you started with, the additional three. And then that increases DEC's fiscal note to the 1.854. And again, then you look up at the top on personal services at 883.5. That would be the source of funding of DNR. And they go up to four positions that year, adding two to the two that they already got.
Well, Mr. Chairman, go ahead. When I look at DNR's in 15, they have personal services of 425, and they have a total of 566. So I guess I'm not clear where the 883.5 corresponds with DNR's if it's under personal services or interagency receipts. It's 566.7. So I don't know where the other couple hundred thousand dollars went, but
where's Representative Hawker when you need him, right?
Anyway, Mr. Chairman, I guess it's just a lot of money. I mean, you know, we've been struggling to cut down and make sure that we don't just build into the operating budget base large numbers, whether it's $2 million or whether it's $2.4 million or whatever that is. So it just, you know, again, seems to me that under the, what we're requesting is that there be a report back on the $2 million and what's being accomplished, and so we can know whether we really want to go, whether it still makes sense.
I understand. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, If I understand everything right, as we proceed along with this, any additional funding you'll have to come to us for, but before the plan would be instigated, it would become before all of us in the form of a bill or something?
Yes, Representative Wilson, through the chair, the short answer is yes, and it would come up to you certainly in terms of budget considerations, adding the PCNs that we would need and the increment. But also, what we would anticipate, we'd be back to you for probably statutory changes, additional authorities, that sort of thing that would be fleshed out as we would work with the federal agencies to put together that program description. On 402 primacy, you may recall, because I believe you were here during that time period, we came back twice to the body. We needed two sets of statutory changes in addition to whatever we needed on budget and PCNs, and we anticipate the same would be here. Certainly the budget creates a gate, but I think there'll be several other gates there too.
Okay. I think because we're going to have several times during this whole process that will be before all of us, and so asking you to stop and do something in the middle of all the other things that you're going to be doing, and I just don't think that that's probably necessary.
Fair enough. Any other comments? Representative Johnson, you may.
Nope.
Maintain your objection?
I do maintain my objection.
Okay.
Wrap up
with Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to make it clear that that if we do see some statutory changes, those wouldn't necessarily have a fiscal note, so we wouldn't really see costs associated with that legislation, and that was true of what happened with NPDS primacy. So it really would be just the budget, folks, and I know having served on the DEC budget subcommittee, we didn't really have ample time this time to really get into any discussion about any one program or anything in great detail. So certainly be the prerogative of the members to take the time out of their schedule to do that. But in offering this amendment, I wasn't anticipating this being a lengthy report that would require a significant amount of staff time, but just more executive summary type of progress report that an individual could prepare, you know, over an afternoon. That would just be informative. So not trying to, you know, put somebody doing the graduate thesis or something, but just give us an update on a progress report as this is coming together to give us a little bit more information to go on. For me, the frustration with hearing this bill at all is just that there's a lot of missing information. And so I would have liked to have some of that information even today in terms of overall estimates would help me determine whether this is the right move. But certainly given some of the conversations we've had about fiscal constraints, we're going to have some tough decisions to make. I think this information could just give us a little bit more to go on. So thank you.
And we've been joined by Representative Hawker. Objections maintained. Question is, shall we adopt amendment number one as amended? And let's take a brief at ease.
Computer's not always as fast as it used to be. Okay. Representative Tarr.
Yes.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Hawker?
No.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Co-Chair Sadler?
No.
Co-Chair Feige?
Yes.
4 yea, 5 nay.
And by a vote of 5-4, the amendment is defeated. All right, next up, and are there any other amendments? Okay, SB, or Senate Bill 27. We've concluded public testimony. I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee pass Senate Bill 27, version 28/GS, 1750/alpha with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. As Hoser.
I'll object for discussion.
And there's been an objection. So, Representative Seeger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, we had a lot of, or we had some information the other day on 404. We know that only two other states have done this. Every other state that has looked at it has rejected it. We had the study that was introduced that just came out in December of last year from Virginia. They looked at this. We also had testimony from the department and from that study in there. The stakeholders objected to it as well, as the cost not going to be weighed with the benefits. We know that the costs to industry are less under the federal program than they are going to be under the state program. There'll be a large increase in costs, I believe, to people that make applications when the state has to fund it all and the state has to have all the employees to process those permits. I think that that's why the industry stakeholders in Virginia said that they did not do that. And then also Virginia found that the statewide programmatic general permits provided almost all the benefits without all the costs and that were associated with assumption of 404. And we had testimony from the department that they have the ability to do statewide programmatic general permits. And since they have that ability, I would hope that they would proceed with that instead of going down this rabbit trail that I think in the end is going to be, if we're talking about hiring 49 new state employees, spending a lot of time, I mean, if we're talking about time, about writing an annual report, the time that's going to be spent with whether it's 8 or 12 employees and all the money that's going to be spent on this stuff is could much more beneficially to industry and to the state of Alaska be spent on statewide programmatic general permits, which allow us to not only exercise on the state lands and state without the exclusion of state waters, but comprehensively allows us to work in coordination on the federal waters as well. So I think that the rabbit trail of going down assumption of 404 clean water dredge and fill permits does not get us the bang for the buck that we would like to see and doesn't move the state forward in its desire to have input on all of those dredge and fill permits. So that's why I would oppose passage of this bill, especially noting that the agencies have the ability right now to do and go forward with statewide programmatic general permits. And so I would hope we would proceed in that direction. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other discussion from the committee? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My biggest concern about Alaska in the next few years, we are a resource development state and our future rests with our resources. My biggest concern is that the federal government grinds to a halt, that the excuse, which is custom made for some people who don't want to see any development in Alaska, we can't get the permitting done, we don't have the staff, we don't have the money, and Alaska is going to have to be prepared to step into the breach, or we're going to fall prey of not doing any development. My concern is this is just the first arrow of many that we will be absorbing when we have to take control of our own destiny. And the further along the path we are, when what I believe is that inevitable day comes, the better off we will be. There'll be a time when we look back, I foresee we'll look back at this $1.4 million or whatever the number may be, as the best investment we ever made. You know, how many developments do we have to approve quickly to make up that amount of money? How many barrels of oil down the pipeline? How many mines? How many people employed in Alaska do we have to do to make that up? So that's the reason that I support doing this bill. I think it's high time that Alaska takes control of its own destiny every chance we get. We do it with lawsuits about everything from polar bears to everything else without flinching. And it's time that we get to the grassroots of taking control of that destiny. And this is probably the second step that I've seen us make as a state. And I wholeheartedly support us taking control of our own destiny.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Representative Hawker, then Tuck.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo Representative Johnson's thoughts, but also just add my own perspective that the legislation proposed before us is permissive, and it is language that permits the executive branch of government to pursue primacy, to look at it, study it, determine if it is, in fact, the best course of action for the state. This legislation does not establish such a program. It does not mandate that the state actually adopt a program, but it says, for all the reasons Representative Johnson just mentioned, why we as a policymaking body, and at the end of the day, the appropriating body, ought to investigate. Because if we don't look at it, we will never know. And I will support the legislation because I think we should be looking at our future with the concerns raised by Representative Johnson. And I would further emphasize that when that day in the future comes and a decision is made to implement a program, if it is made, that will still require appropriation and funding. And at the end of the day, the legislature still holds the purse strings. So this is not our last bite at the apple. It is moving, I think, a very important, very sound, and very wise process forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Tuck, from Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of the comments that were made earlier is good arguments for coastal zone management, which we did have control at one time, the state of Alaska. We were able to make decisions right here in our own backyards for projects that were moving forward. It seems like the trend is going the other way, not taking control of ourselves. I'm not opposed to taking control. It's just right now, I don't feel like I have enough information to justify spending so much money looking into it further. I want to know what the problem is. And we don't know how much of a backlog there is from the federal government and how much of that backlog we'd be able to control and to reduce through primacy. And once we do have primacy, the Army Corps of Engineers still has that authority that they retain, and they can preempt us, they can override us at any time. At this time, I can't support the bill because I'd like to have a little bit more information. And, you know, one other thing that we have is we are not exercising programmatic general permits. And I think that will do a lot in reducing part of that backlog. And I think that's the first step that we should take. And that's something that the department already has authority to do. Why aren't we doing it just yet? I have no idea. But I think taking such a big bite into growing state government, and taking that responsibility away from the, doing stuff that the feds are already doing just doesn't make sense at this point, at this time, in my mind. So,
thank you, Representative. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder what the founding fathers of Alaska would think of. It'd be cheaper to let them take care of our fish traps and so forth. But we don't know enough about, escaping yet. But Mr. Chairman, with the amount of the wetlands we have in Alaska, we are a bit of a special case nationally. And with the critical nature of permitting wetlands dredge and flow activities to all kinds of activities in Alaska and how important it is to our primary revenue generator in the state, it seems prudent to me to go ahead and give a hard look at the benefits and costs of assuming wetlands primacy. It's a process that the state has gone through successfully for water quality and air quality. And the benefits, I have to say, I think they seem to be manifest. It would give us fewer departments for coordination purposes. We would have Alaska-based decisions, which would still be no less strict than what the federal standards are. Alaska courts would adjudicate disputes over it, and we would have Alaska design mitigation measures. I think these are all good things, and but certainly we're giving a significant amount of money to the departments, telling them to go do a difficult job, and we anticipate coming back with good answers and good information to inform our decision going forward. So with that, I will support the bill. And I call the question.
I'm sorry. In wrap up,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple of quick comments for folks to think about, just in terms of our comments. Unfortunately, we didn't hear from the folks at BLM, but just want to remind in the presentation that was sent out, it showed that almost 80% of their individual permits, which are the ones that we're talking about, not the general ones, are granted within 120 days. Less than 1% of 1% are denied. So, you know, the idea that the CORE program's not working, I think, is in question. And then also go back to that AOGA letter that, you know, emphasizes, again, while majority of the nation's wetlands in Alaska, many of these may be non-assumable by the state, and they would still remain part of the federal jurisdiction. So we didn't get answers about where this would apply. I spent some time on their website. I think, you know, very few areas where this would actually apply. And again, even, you know, that CD5 example that everyone likes to bring up, that project would not have been impacted by that because it would still be under the federal jurisdiction. So just really wish we had more information about where this would actually apply. And that we, you know, we should remember that the individuals who are making these decisions now are Alaskans. They are Alaskans who work in Alaska at the CORE office. They understand Alaska issues. They understand the state and development, which is why I think they have such a high success rate with their decision making in terms of it happened at a very fast pace. So I don't think the system is broken, and, you know, would have been able to support the bill had we passed the amendment that would give us a little bit more information going forward, but just am not comfortable with the expenditure at this time with so much uncertainty about the commitment. Thank you.
And Commissioner, I'll give you a chance to help us conclude and wrap up.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'd just like to wrap up by maybe hitting very quickly some of the points that were just raised. The problem. Is there a problem? The Corps seems to be doing a good job. This costs a lot. Yes, there's a huge problem. The problem is simply that we have a federal agency that controls permitting on one of the most important sectors of our lands. And this is not about the backlog of the Corps. Even if the Corps had a zero backlog, we really should be looking at the possibility and the costs and benefits of assuming primacy. This is about Alaskans having control, Alaskan agencies having control over permitting and our natural resource development in Alaska, and having those challenges resolved here in Alaska, not in Washington, D.C. About the concern about wetlands, and perhaps we wouldn't get that many wetlands, there's been concern raised about femoral streams and every wetland adjacent possibly being excluded. I mean, that is a big issue, certainly. We'll be addressing that as we go forward. But you must understand that we are going into this process with a strong position that we will get primacy over most of the wetlands in Alaska. And in fact, the EPA has, in past guidance documents and documents, basically stated, and I'll read you a statement that comes from a 1980 EPA document that was specifically addressed to primacy for states. It says, by assuming the 404 program, states will gain clear jurisdiction on most of the nation's lakes, small rivers, streams, and inland wetlands. We clearly believe we'll get jurisdiction over most of the wetlands in Alaska and most of the North Slope. I think that's very significant. About the issue of the state programmatic general permits, and why are we seeking primacy when we can just get those? The answer is very simple. It's a different tool. It does a different purpose. And we will go for those also. But primacy is a different tool. Wetlands permitting in Alaska is very complex. There are a number of tools out there. Primacy is just one of them. And I think it's very important to understand in this bill, the fiscal note gives us the opportunity to go for the other tools as well as primacy. And so at the end of the day, if we decide not to go for primacy, we will still have hopefully gotten some of these other tools, and the state will benefit greatly. So I just wanted to clear the air on those points, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
And Commissioner?
I don't want to belabor it, but I think, too, that some of the comparisons to Virginia and saying other states looked at this, none of them pursued it. There's a conference going on right now that our deputy commissioner is at back in Washington, D.C., with all the state wetland administrators and EPA and the Corps of Engineers, and that's the main topic of the discussion. And there's a number of states that are back there for the specific purpose of looking at how we can get primacy. There's a number of states that are very actively pursuing this, and so I don't think that this is, you know, we're chasing something everybody else looked at and rejected. In Virginia, I would go back and look at how many wetlands they have left in Virginia compared to how many wetlands we have in Alaska. And we have less than 1% of our wetlands that have been lost in this state. Virginia, I don't know what the percentage is, but I'm sure it's a lot higher. So I'm sure that there's a lot fewer individual permits back there. So probably that this program would have a lot less value, this tool, as Deputy Commissioner mentioned, primacy would have for them than it would us. So this is looking at it from through the Alaska needs. It's not looking at it through Virginia needs or Oregon's needs. So whether primacy is good, the question is good, is it good for Alaska? And I don't think we should compare ourselves with other states here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And just in sort of having the last word here, I understand Representative Seaton's concern about other states, but me personally, I don't care how they do it outside. Our job is to look at what's best for Alaska, and this question of whether or not to seek primacy in the 404 permitting process is certainly a worthy question to look at. There are a number of options, as was brought out during the testimony, and those options have some are advantages, some are disadvantages, and I think we need to investigate those. Whether or not there are going to be, we are a resource development state, there are going to be projects in the future, and the status of our 404 permitting program will have an impact on those future projects one way or another. So I guess that's kind of my wrap up. Representative Seaton, do you maintain your objection?
I do.
Okay. Madam Secretary, on the question of Senate Bill number 27. Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Tarr?
No.
Representative Tuck?
No.
Representative Hawker?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Co-Chair Feige is absent.
Excuse
me, Co-Chair Sadler is absent. Co-Chair Feige?
Yes.
Five yeas, three nays.
And by a vote of 5-3, Senate Bill number 27 is moved out of committee. Take a brief ID and sign the paperwork. Will be House Bill number 158. Online, we have Clark Cox from the DNR for questions and Craig Fleener from the Department of Fish and Game for questions. We do have a CS that's been put together that combined the three separate amendments that we had originally introduced during the last meeting. And Representative Wilson, if you would.
I move CS for House Bill number 158, version U, before us. For discussion.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. I think the best way to do this is to, for each of the individual sponsors of the original amendments, we'll kind of go down through the sections and perhaps each of those sponsors could address those particular items. In section one, the only the amendment is at the very end, and it adds a line or a subparagraph 11 that just says that, that the department will have the authority to implement commercial concession programs on state land, and that is to accommodate both big game guiding as well as there's another amendment here for transporters. Section 2 adds the section regarding big game commercial services, and see, there's a couple of amendments in there. I think subparagraph B, Representative Wilson, you want to address that?
What page was that?
Page 3, line, yours is, one of yours is line 9 there.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just felt it was really important that not only do we look at the land considerations and the land uses in this, but that we really look at the resource. And I didn't want the DNR to go in and just go ahead and change everything automatically. What I want to see is if there's a unit or an area that is doing fine, that the resources are sustainable, and there's so many guides in that area that and they're not having a problem with anything, then I would like to see it stay the way it is. And so I thought that there should be we should get numbers for the resource from the Department of Fish and Game so that we really know what we're dealing with, not only with land use itself, but also with the resource. And so that's what my amendment pulls that all together and does that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative.
I'm sorry, which amendment is this? Which version?
This is the CS, version U.
Oh, I thought we were talking on amendment.
Well, the CS incorporates the previous three amendments.
Oh, I got
that
you.
Had been
okay,
introduced.
So we have a committee substitute?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You do have that in front of you?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. You. Representative Seaton?
What page and lines are we talking about on that?
Representative Wilson was just talking about page 3, line 3 to line 11. And Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, in the original version of the bill, number 11 on page 2, implement a hunting guide concession program or otherwise limit the number of individuals authorized to conduct big game commercial guiding. So, in the CS, then it was necessary to put that into another section for purposes of incorporating this relationship with the Commissioner of Fish and Game.
Okay. On page 2 of the CS, line 28,
mm-hmm.
Okay, what that language is intended to do is broadens it slightly so that they can include both guides and transporter concession programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then on the next page, page 3, paragraph B, Representative Wilson addressed that. And then, Representative Johnson, do you want to address subparagraph C there at line 12 on page 3?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We heard testimony that, and the numbers may be, you know, subject to debate, but there are X number of guides and X minus whatever number of areas. And the concern was that if a guide got three areas, that would exclude other people. So what this amendment does is include the federal concession holdings so that they can only have three. So for every federal permit that's out there on a concession, that would open one more state concession for another guide. So basically, instead of a person being able to have six in the state, it limits them to three in any combination. So it just opens it up, kind of relieve some of my concern about some of the guides that have been doing it, losing areas, losing concessions. So it kind of, it cuts down on the number or adds the number of guides that are going to be available or have access to these this state resource that we're going to kind of, you know, I'm not sure I like allocation anyway, but the more we open it up to everyone, the more I like it. So that's the, that's what this basic amendment does, three permits total, not three and three in state and federal.
Okay, and then moving down through through the section, line 20, subparagraph D, are just some definitions. Line 25, She just lays out the section dealing with the big game transporter concession program, big game transporter concession program. And let's see. That will, if you go on to the bill, section or line 11 on page 4, basically talks about the effective date of, let's see.
Of the transporters.
Yeah, it starts as basically the effective date for the transporters would start 1 year after the department implements their big game guide concession program. So it'll give a year for the department to develop the transporter program after they've established the big game guide. And that was a recognition that perhaps doing all of this at once is a little bit too big of a bite. And I got a lot of feedback that perhaps splitting it into at least two separate bites was more appropriate. So.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, and I had this concern or curiosity about the original bill, because even in Section 1, it's just may rather than shall in terms of the original program. But, of course, the intent of the legislation is right to give them the authority to do that, so we'd expect them to follow up on that. But now in this new section about the transporters, it's also may. And so has the department made a commitment that they will follow through on actually implementing that, or would it be better to have shall just to give them explicit direction that the next step is the big game transporter concession program?
That's an excellent point. Why don't we save that for once we've adopted okay. the CS, and that perhaps is worthy of a conceptual amendment. Okay. Hmm. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back on the previous amendment there, that's on page 3, starting on line 3 through line 11. Okay. The program, as I understand it, is a DNR program, and yet in this section, we're saying that on line 4, the commissioner of Fish and Game shall... And then under 1, determine the number and type of concessions that may be provided in each game management unit. So as the resource changes, does this mean that the Department of Fish and Game goes in and changes the number and types of concessions that DNR has to allocate because the number and types of concessions are set up by DNR, and now we have the Department of Fish and Game stepping in and determining the number and allocation, and I presume that those are going to be based on the fluctuating biomass of the resource. And so has this been considered, and should we get some testimony on that interaction between DNR's program and Fish and Game actually controlling the number and types of permits that DNR has to issue, because it's a shall?
I think the intent here, and Representative Wilson, you can correct me if I stray, we believe that the Department of Natural Resources manages the land and how the land is allocated. How many concessions you have on a particular piece of land is dependent upon essentially the carrying capacity of that land, and the department that is basically, that's their job, is to know what the big game resources are on those particular pieces of land, you know, what the game, the population counts and whatnot are. So they would have better access to the data. They have the biologists on staff that would better be able to determine what the carrying capacity in terms of, you know, number of hunters, a number of possible takings, that they should be the ones to determine, you know, how much in the way of concessions should be allowed on those individual blocks of land that are that would be set up and managed by DNR. It's something that I think they addressed when they put together their guide concession program. All we're doing here is we're formalizing that and specifically stating that we expect Fish and Game to provide that information to DNR for their program. And going down to subparagraph 2, there on line 9, page 3, we would expect them to review that, not necessarily every year, but every 5 years, which matches up with when those areas come up for review, I guess. Basically, the Fish and Game would re-look at it every 5 years and make adjustments.
And, Mr. Chairman, I was just, you know, as we're going forward, and this is amendment, the CS that we're adopting, and I just, you know, haven't heard from DNR whether they're implementing a program that somebody else controls the numbers and the types of concessions, and I'm just wanting to make sure that that works with the departments to be able to...
We have pretty clear on the line.
Good.
Mr. Flanner, would you like to address that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Unfortunately, I haven't had an opportunity to give a whole lot of thought to this as I just received it about an hour ago, but looking at this, I think one of the things that we might want to be careful with is in section 2B on line 4, page 2, where it talks about the Commissioner of Fish and Game. I think that it's... I think that the department has long stayed away from the concept of allocation of resources. That's been a Board of Game responsibility, and I think that one of the problems that this may present for us is that it puts the department and department staff in the business of allocation when you're talking about specific numbers and of who is actually going to, excuse me, not who, but actually how many are going to be able to harvest. And it probably would be good to get the DNR perspective on this as well, but it seems as if the amount of work that would have to go into this would probably take some additional staff time. And one of the things that we're pretty cautious about is the relationship that our on-the-ground staff develop with hunters and guides throughout the state, and one of the things that we might need to be cautious about is how we potentially jeopardize that relationship if it's the on-the-ground staff that are going to be helping us determine the numbers and the types of concessions that are going to be put into each one of these areas. Clearly, we want to work with DNR on determining these, and it may be some language that talks about DNR consulting with the Department of Fish and Game and the Board of Game to determine population levels and harvestable surplus, which is the process we've gone through to get where we are now. Perhaps language that deals with it in that way might work a little bit better.
Okay, Mr. Fogles, would you come up and address that?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Ed Fogles, Deputy Commissioner of DNR. And again, as Deputy Commissioner Flinger said, we haven't really had much of a chance to discuss this back and forth between the departments. I do want to point out that in the process that we came up with the maps and the proposed allocations in the current program, we worked extremely closely with Fish and Game. If anything, they drove the process more. We rely on them. On these numbers, we are not the wildlife experts, and that's why we really tighten our relationship with Fish and Game in this, and we expect to continue to do that throughout this whole process. And every 5 years, as we go through and reevaluate each concession, our intent would be to do that jointly, with Fish and Game, as to the merits of actually being required to, or Fish and Game setting that number. I guess at this point, I would just say, like Deputy Commissioner Flinger said, we haven't had enough time to really kind of determine the merits of that. We also have Clark Cox on the line, who's our lead person that works on this. I'd ask Clark to chime in if he has anything to add to what I just said. Clark?
Yes,
And Mr. Cox, do you have any comment?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks for the time. Appreciate your time, Mr. Chair and the committee. I would kind of echo what Craig Fleener, their deputy commissioner for Fish and Game, mentioned. You know, DNR is all about the land access and the use of the land. These numbers, have, you know, through years of work with the industry, looking at the Commercial Services Board numbers, is not directly tied back to the animals, the allocation of the animals. It's about the use patterns and the appropriate number of clients and guides working the area. So I think some more time could be spent on how this might work with Fish and Game and our program as a whole.
Representative Wilson, then Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern about it was I realized, and in fact, when I had the Department of Fish and Game come to my office, they brought DNR with them. So I totally realized that they're really working together on this. But having said that, DNR hasn't taken all of their recommendations. You know, they've picked and chose the ones that they wanted to use, and I just have a concern. So, you know, if we took out subsection one there on line six, if we took out subsection one, I still would want it to be a little weighted toward Fish and Game for that reason. They are working together. There's no doubt about that, and I'm not complaining about that, except that I'm concerned about the resource Fish and Game they determine the appropriate harvest levels and how much is available in each game management unit, and I just think that they DNR really needs to listen very closely to what they say, because they're the ones that are responsible for the management of our wildlife, and we want to make sure that it's sustainable. And I just feel that I know, and I only know of one area, because I have a guide that is a constituent of mine that works in that area, and because of that, I was concerned that there didn't seem to be a problem in that area at all, but yet there was a lot of changes made. So that's where I'm coming from.
Yeah. Representative Seaton?
Thank you, and I share Representative Wilson's concerns there. But the question is whether the commissioner of Fish and Game, or whether that's actually an element that the Board of Game has the authority to do instead of the commissioner. So there's, you know, I think the a little bit of time to have the legal frameworks and the make sure that we get it right would be helpful, and so I'm not opposed to the amendment. I'm just trying to figure out that we craft it correctly.
Mm-hmm. No, duly noted. The clerk and Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just on the CS, I know Representative Johnson explained page 3, lines 12 through 19, the concern addressed by this particular section. And I'm just wondering if there's anyone who can answer the question of whether there's any reason we wouldn't be allowed to do that in terms of limit the number of concessions and a person would have available for this program in relationship to what they have with the federal government, or how, if that could be explained. Maybe.
Are you asking whether or not we have the authority to limit that?
Yeah. I don't know, in a way, it would, I don't know if we can, basically we're limiting what can happen on federal lands in a way.
No, we're actually, and we had that discussion, Mr. Chairman, right. Okay. We had that discussion with the drafter, and his concern originally was, well, we're limiting federal. I said, no, we're really not. Uh-huh. Federal can still do their three, uh-huh. But what it says is if you do your three, you can't do state land. So we're only dealing with state land, which we have total control over. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't step into to regulate. And there was a question he asked, and once it was clarified, mm-hmm. said that no, and it doesn't affect the feds. And it might affect someone's decision-making as whether they apply for a federal permit or a state permit. But it wouldn't affect what we do. We're not telling them what to do, and they can't tell us what to do.
Any follow-up?
Representative Tarr.
And I guess I'm just not aware of whether that information is public. So then would we be requiring, as part of their concession application, that they disclose any federal applications that were outstanding and or any federal concessions that had been awarded?
I don't think applications
I think we'd need to do that, and that would be up to the department to regulate. But as we sit and listen to testimony, we heard a lot of testimony from guides that said, yes, I have a federal concession. Mm-hmm. So I think it's probably public information, and the commissioner can, deputy commissioner can probably answer that. Probably go to our website and find out who has it, and that's just one of the criteria. So,
Mr. Fogle? On that question?
Yeah, Representative Tarleton, Chair, I believe all that information is public as to which guides can operate in which federal areas. I'd like to double check with Clark Cox, though, because he's the one that really knows the nuts and bolts of all this. Clark, can you verify that, please?
Mr. Cox?
Sure. This is Clark Cox. So through the chair, Representative Tarr. Yeah, we've been working very closely with the other federal agencies as well, and they've made all that information available to us. We could get that information. If I may, though, this wouldn't limit someone that might hold three DNR concessions from still securing a concession or a permit or a license on native lands or federal lands after they get R3. So they still could hold more than three then if they got ours first.
And I address that, but I think the document clearly says they cannot hold more than three. So they would have to lose a state permit if they gained federal permits after that. If they did that, I think they would be in violation of one of the restrictions and be in jeopardy of losing all their concessions.
Yeah, once we find out about that, that would be true.
And it's like we said, it's public information. So that's a pretty risky business.
Yeah, the Native Corporation lands would not be public information. We've not got that information.
Yep. And nor does the CS address Native lands, and I don't know that we need to necessarily.
And Mr. Chairman, it would not be my intention to try to regulate what private land owners do. That would go way beyond my philosophy.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the third amendment on page 3, line 26, where it was May, Mr. Chairman, I know we discussed a shall, and I would be concerned if we did that because it may take DNR a little more time than 1 year to fully implement a program, and I would want to also make sure that language on individuals who provide transportation service to big game hunters in the field, I mean, that could be boat operators as well. I think you're talking about air transporters, I don't know.
All kinds of transport.
All kinds of transportation service. So that is the air taxis as well as the people that are transporters. Is that what I'm understanding? Because we haven't really had testimony from the air service guys or the mm-hmm. transporters. And so I think leaving that as May gives the department more flexibility for having public hearings and not having to do something by, you know, a certain time. So well,
that would be something to say for the amendment process once we decide whether or not to adopt the CS. All right, that's a point well made. Any other discussion, Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on the transporter services again, because it's all sorts of different vehicles, I guess the question I have is there licensing requirements or special business licenses that are required to be able to transport passengers, whether it's through an airplane, a boat, four-wheelers, whatever it happens to be, to transport? Is that, and DNR have the ability to be able to regulate that?
Transporters come under the Big Game Commercial Services Board's authority.
I'm sorry, say that again one more time.
Transporters come under the Big Game Commercial Services Board authority.
Okay.
And that's what I passed you there, all the statutes that pertain to that.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Seaton.
Does that include the air taxis?
Air taxis have an exemption if the transportation of guides and big game, all that, generally considered commercial services, is only if they have an exemption if it's incidental to their overall air taxi business. Now, if you look at the list of transporters, you know, most of the major air taxis that do any reasonable number of hunts and drop-offs and that kind of thing are listed. But I think it would be we'd have to look and see, you know, exactly what the definition of incidental is and whether or not we need to modify that. It's something, again, we can probably consider and as we look at the bill here. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just back to that section that Representative Johnson described, because it sounded like the individual on the phone maybe brought up an issue that hadn't been thought of in terms of timing of how this would work. It sounded like what he was saying is someone could apply for, you know, three concessions through the DNR program, be awarded those, and subsequently apply for three concessions through the federal program, and so they'd end up getting potentially six, but then they wouldn't be up for reauthorization of their DNR concession for 5 years. So during that five-year period, then they could potentially have six concessions because of the timing. But maybe that's not an issue, but just my hearing his comments made me think that I guess there's a way to potentially abuse that.
Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chairman, if you had three state permits and filed for a federal one and got it, you'd be in violation of your permits that you held with the state and potentially lose all three. So this is clearly says you cannot hold more than three, and any way to circumvent that would be a violation of your application and all the things that you've sworn that you're going to do inside your concession area. And you could, if you did that, you could lose all three. I guess if that's a risk you want to take, you could lose everything. So,
and that would be a simple matter for the state concessionaire. Say, listen, I just picked up a federal one. I'm going to drop and pick one to drop. And then that would go out into the back into the hopper, so to speak, and be reallocated by the department.
And as a follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does the department have an easy way to access this? I guess we're saying people, it's public information, so we would always be in the know about where the applications were.
Yeah, Representative Tarr, through the chair. Yeah, that I believe that this kind of information is pretty transparent, and there's always a pretty bright light shining on it. And I think most of the guiding industry knows who's guiding where, and our staff would know that pretty clearly. So I think it would be more than a high risk for someone to risk that. I think that people would know instantly. And I think even though we haven't had much time to really go through this, I imagine that in our guide concession itself, you could put a clear stipulation that if you ever get a federal concession, you're going to have to drop one of these or something. I don't know. We'll have to figure that out.
Mr. Chairman, if I could. I think this would be probably one of the great experiences in self-policing. If somebody found out that somebody picked up a federal guide area, I guarantee you someone's going to want to say, I want one of his state areas, and you'd probably get more phone calls than we get on a controversial piece of legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, at the risk of upsetting the Labor and Commerce Chair for taking his too much of his room time.
Another
10 minutes? It's going to take a while here. Representative Wilson had moved to adopt. I had objected. I will remove my objection. Is there any other objection, Representative Tuck?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I actually moved to object, only because I'm still on that one amendment that's pretty ingrained in the new CS, wondering if that's going to work or not. I'd almost rather keep the old version and then introduce the other two amendments to bring it up so that one doesn't hold it up the whole. Because if I remember correctly, if I'm looking at this correctly, we never did a number of amendments prior, but the pretty lengthy amendment, version 8.1, has still some questions to it, so I'd rather
that's not part of the
part of the CS
question here. Okay, questions: do we adopt the CS? But
and I'm speaking on why I object to adopting the CS, and so. But I just wanted to have just a discussion. If everybody else feels comfortable, I'm comfortable with it too. It looks like it'd be cleaner if we just go ahead and keep the original. And then adopt amendments to that. Due to the fact that this one here we just still have a question on, I don't want to hold this up anyway. So I'm just opening it up for discussion. If everybody's cool with it.
What's that?
Yeah,
no, we're not voting on the bill.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I went to public school and all, but one, we're taking one amendment out, it's going to be easier than putting three in. Just simple math.
That's correct.
So that's.
Okay, well, like I said earlier, Mr. Chair, that it is pretty integrated. Things got moved around. But
I understand.
If everyone's okay with it, I'll remove my objection.
The surveillance.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess just because we've had such significant interest in this legislation, if we adopt the CS, are we going to take further public testimony, or do we close
public
testimony?
Yes, we will take further public testimony.
Okay.
Because the guides need to comment on this. I'm sure the transporters may comment. There's a lot of, and there's, quite frankly, I recognize the fact we just got this from the drafter, and I'd like to have everybody have the opportunity to look it over, but first we need to adopt it. So,
okay.
Do you withdraw your objection?
I withdraw my objection. Thank you, Mr.
Okay. Representative Seaton?
No, I was just going to say that I hope we would adopt the amendment, or the CS, so that people would have it to comment on and to review. So, thank you.
That is my intent, that people adopt this. Hearing no further objection, the U version of House Bill 158 is adopted. And with that, our next meeting will be on Friday at 1 o'clock. We have pending referral scheduled to hear Senate Bill 21. We'll see how the other body fares, but if for some reason we do not have Senate Bill 21 in our possession, my intent will be to continue on House Bill 158, the CS to 158. And so if you would like to amend 158, please have your amendments ready, and hopefully we can take some public testimony, deal with amendments, and perhaps move it if we don't get 21 by Friday. So, anybody else have any questions? We're